disturbing discovery at an abandoned mobile home park.
Another suicide.
The nation's suicide rate is at its highest point since 1986.
When police came to the house, they saw tons and tons of trash. Turns out the daughter is a hoarder.
Crews made the gruesome discovery today inside a home.
They had 70 cats and dogs, mostly dogs. They found one deceased kitten inside the home.
A woman was found dead in a local home. That house had been tented for fumigation work.
The following is a true story and contains explicit content. Names and locations have been kept anonymous in order to protect the privacy of those involved. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm your host, Vanessa Fearson, and this is a true story. Like any business, as you start to take on more and more work, you begin to need to take on more and more people to handle the workload. Seems easy enough, but any business owner can tell you that finding the right people for the job isn't always the easiest activity. To make it worse, I'm also extra particular. I've worked very hard to ensure that every one of my clients receive top-notch service and are met with professionalism, kindness, and no small amount of empathy. It's one of the main reasons our clients love us. So when we're hiring, we're looking for people who can honestly and sincerely supply that to all of our clients. I'm not interested in people who want to get into the industry because they think it's cool. It is cool, but if that's as deep as you go, well, you're not going to get too far. That being said, I'm sure you can imagine that we don't hire often. When we do, it's a lengthy process and usually comes with no small amount of hair pulling and frustration. It has, however, worked out in the end, and we've ended up with some really great people. But people come and go in this industry. Even if you can stomach the work itself, you may go days without work and so without a paycheck. But whatever the reason, few last for more than a couple years max, for one reason or another. This story will give you an example as to why. Normally, we're contacted by friends or family of deceased people inquiring about our services. The call we got this day was neither. He was an insurance adjuster, and he had been the adjuster on our first really big decomp. Now he had another client who needed our services in the worst way. The client's brother had passed away in his home and went undiscovered for about a month, according to the county coroner. This happens more often than you might expect. Before I got into the industry, death wasn't something I thought about often, usually only when the subject came up or was presented. But when I did think about death, it was never about someone dying alone or going undiscovered. Now, being in the business, at first it surprised me how often this happens. But it doesn't surprise me anymore. It just makes sense. However, when I was told that this guy hadn't lived alone and still managed to be undiscovered for a month, well, shock would be more of an accurate description of how I felt. Her son was living with her and she was well into her winter years. One might have thought that he was the good son that lived at home with his mother to care for her in her old age. But this was not the case. It was actually the other way around. Before he passed away, this lady's son had been diagnosed as schizophrenic. Our client had been trying to get him into a proper care facility, but her mother had maintained enough presence of mind and became upset at the gesture, which prevented her from doing so. Unfortunately, she was left with no option but to let her mom care for him. At some point, the mother began to suffer from dementia, and it progressively got worse. Although it was impossible to say for certain, it was easy for me to imagine this blissfully ignorant old woman walking past her son's room, his lifeless body lying on the bedroom floor, and she'd make a comment about him being lazy or needed to get up. I could see her calling him out to the table for dinner or wishing him a good night as she made her way to bed, completely oblivious to the fact her son was no longer amongst the living. In light of these circumstances, the client was able to do for her mother what she had tried to do for her brother, and she placed her mom in a care facility. But now she was left with the burden of making arrangements for her brother, also taking care of and selling the house. When we arrived on scene, we met with the adjuster and we were introduced to the client. She was upset, but not overly so. It seemed that in spite of her attempts to get her family proper care, she had been disconnected from her mom and her brother for quite some time. I'm going to go off on a side tangent here, and it'll make sense later. As horrible as it might be to think of and even act on it, I urge you to take all necessary measures to get your ducks lined up now. Get a will drafted up, open estate accounts, or whatever you need to do. If you have elderly family living, encourage them to do the same. No one wants to plan for death, but we've seen it rip families apart. It's terrible to watch someone have to bury a family member, deal with all the service arrangements, ward off undeserving vultures, etc. It can suck up years of your life, and it's an overwhelming experience. In some situations, it's so bad that it prevents grieving and healing. All right, back on track here. Ethan and I went through the property and assessed the extent of the damage, and we got an idea of what would be needed to fully restore the property to safety. If not for the decomp odor, it would seem like any other hoarding house. Trash was piled on the floor with a makeshift pathway tramped down the center of the hallway. A few pieces of furniture poked through the top of the mound of garbage, and that was the living room. Most of the house was trashed, but looked like it had been untouched for some time. Spiderwebs covered everything. The trash, furniture, and light fixtures were all coated with a heavy layer of dust, with the exception being a lone easy chair in the corner of the living room. Next to it was a small table with a single lamp. Although the spiderwebs were present here and it was really dirty, I could see that this was where the old woman spent all, or at least most of her time. The seat of the chair had the telltale depressions in it, indicating long-term use. This was also the only lamp that worked in the whole house. The first thing we wanted to do was isolate where the man had decomposed, as that would be our first priority. We had been told that he died in his room. The first room we came to seemed to be somewhat of an oasis from the hoarding. Somewhat. You could see the floor move around in there with ease, but it was still filthy. Spiderwebs and thick layers of dust covered everything but the bed, which had a large stain spreading out from the center and running down the sides of it onto the floor. At first glance, one might assume that this was where he had died. However, nothing in this room indicated it was where a man had slept. The furniture, clothes, and bedding all were a bit antiquated. But not only that, it was very feminine. This was his mother's room. The stain we later determined was merely urine and feces, but would still need specific attention. We continued down the hallway and came upon another room that was not spared the hoarding. Once again, trash hid the floor, and through the center of it was a stamped-down pathway leading to the bathroom. This was his room. Right in the middle of the path was a large pile of body fluid-stained trash. I wouldn't be able to tell if it reached the floor until we had excavated our way through the garbage. Oftentimes, even when it's just on carpet, the fluids spread along the subfloor but don't get wicked up to the surface. So what looks like a moderate spot of blood can actually cover a huge area underneath. We finished our assessment and went over everything with the adjuster and gave him our estimate. He pretty much approved it on the spot. The client was very happy about it, and we set up a start date with her. At the time this was all happening, we had been approached by an independent producer, Mike, who was very interested in our line of work. He also liked the fact that we were a family-owned and operated business to boot. So he reached out and we discussed putting together some footage and pitching it to networks to get a show going. One thing I think you should know is I'm extremely camera shy, so I didn't know how this was going to work since I would be a somewhat major element to the show, but I couldn't say no to an opportunity like this. So we agreed and he came up and met with us to go over things in a bit more detail. He came to the house and sat Ethan and I down, together and separately. He interviewed us on camera, and he also got some shots of us doing regular family stuff and playing with the kids. He did this to establish the stark contrast between our often grisly business and our family life. Although he had a lot of great shots, he really wanted to get some job footage. Now, I understood the necessity in order to pitch it, but when you show up to someone's house where their mother, father, son, or whatever had just shot themselves in the head, it seems fairly callous to even suggest we be authorized to film it. So I don't know how he planned on working that out, because I sure as hell wasn't going to ask. However, when this job came in, I thought it was a perfect opportunity. The client had lost her family long before one of them actually died, and she made her peace with it. So I thought she might be open to us filming. It's hard not to sound insensitive saying that, but death and tragedy are all part of life. And in the industry of death, you really learn to accept it and you kind of treat it like anything else. I did have some concerns on bringing these guys into a job like this, though. It wasn't just hoarding and it wasn't just a decomp. It was pretty much every job we do all rolled into one. Biohazard, hoarding, urine, feces, dead cats, spiders, spider webs, and other indeterminate gross filth throughout. I had no idea how or even if they would handle it, but I guess we'd see. When we presented it to the client, she was, as expected, totally fine with allowing us to film, as long as we kept any identifying or personal information out of it. Great. We were all set, and I let Mike know when we were starting the job, and he was all set to meet us there. Boring and overpriced. That's what you can expect these days from 99% of watch brands out there. And the worst part is, you blend in and look like everyone else. No way, not me, and I hope that's not you either. That's why when I look to step up my game and stand out, I've turned to Vincero. Seriously, you need to go check out this brand now. Watches that look and feel like this typically retail for over $500. Vincero watches start at a little over $100. I'm not much of an accessories girl, but I've been wearing the Eros Rose and Fog watch for a while, and I feel naked without it now. It's perfect for every occasion. I'm constantly complimented on it, and people always ask where I got it. So if you haven't picked out a present for that special someone, a Vincero watch would be the perfect gift for him or her. Don't just get a watch, get the watch. Visit getthewatch.net today to check out Vincero's stunning collection. If you use promo code John, you'll receive 15% off your very own Vincero watch. And if you're a last-minute shopper like me, don't worry, expedited shipping is available. Get a Vincero today at getthewatch.net. And don't forget promo code John. Now back to the show. The day of the job arrived and we met the client at the house. We had acquired a large roll-off for the hoarding and we brought a crew of guys with us. One of which had been with us for just under 2 years at this point, and he was our longest-running employee at the time. This guy Weston was very gung-ho. He was a self-starter, friendly, basically everything you'd want in an employee. And he almost didn't get hired. In the initial hiring interview, he was very upfront with the fact that he had a heroin problem in the past, but that he had gone to rehab and had been clean for a few years. Well, as you know, Ethan and I had a previous situation with a heroin addict on our job, so we certainly had our doubts about him. But at the same time, we feel people can change and their past mistakes shouldn't be held over their heads. Within reason, of course. We did drug test him and it came up clean, and the fact that he was honest and upfront about it, well, that went far with us. So we hired him and we watched him like a hawk. However, once he proved himself, he quickly became one of our best guys. We conferred with Mike and asked what he wanted us to do. Since this was to be an unscripted show, he told us to just do what we do and he would capture it on camera. That seems easy enough. So I set the boys to begin work on the trash while Ethan and I addressed the body fluids. The first part was fairly easy. Once we had sprayed all the contaminated trash, it was simply a matter of placing it in the biohazard bin. What wasn't easy was that it seeped further and further to the floor. And as it went down, it spread out. So by the time we had removed all of the contaminated trash and debris, we had pretty much cleared out half of the small room. But we finally reached the floor and removed the contaminated carpet. Luckily, the subfloor wasn't affected, so other than biowashing it as a precaution, there really wasn't a need to treat it. So that was done, and now on to the mother's room. The mattress was not only contaminated with what appeared to be a mixture of blood, urine, and feces, it was a relic. The springs had long ceased to be springs and were merely compressed coils. It was a simple matter to cut the biohazard out and be done with that part of the job. Now, on to the next stage. A major part of the approved scope of work was trashing out the entire house, as that would be necessary in order to remove the odor. So once the biohazard was handled, it was like any other hoarding job. Spiderwebs, rancid garbage, and even a mummified cat were all just another day in the life. Surprisingly, the camera crew was doing pretty good. Day one had yielded decent progress. We were about halfway through the trash out, and all the biohazard had been treated and removed. Not a bad start. As we got to the bottom of the trash, we began to discover syringes all over the place. Again, this is not uncommon, but they were everywhere. We couldn't throw them in the trash, and they had to be collected and placed into Sharps containers so they could be disposed of properly. Not only that, but I could see that Weston was having a hard time with it. He had been clean for a while now, but a major part of staying clean for him was staying away from it and any triggers. Now poor Weston was up to his elbows in needles. He didn't say anything, but he wasn't his usual jovial self. He didn't say much and didn't respond much to conversation. I could see what he was going through, and I told him if it got to be too much to let me know and he could sit this one out. He thanked me and said he was okay and that he'd get through it. So I left him to his work and didn't bother him. The next step was to clean the house. We needed to sweep down the cobwebs, wash down the walls and floors, disinfect the kitchen and bathroom, and remove all the carpet and padding. It was quite the undertaking, and it took all the way into day three. Weston and I were in the laundry room sweeping down cobwebs when he yelled out and started dancing around, slapping his ear. I turned to look at him, concerned, and then I started laughing. Ethan was doubled over laughing. Apparently, he had snuck up behind Weston and touched his ear or something, which is what sent Weston into his frenzy. Weston very soon joined in the mirth, and the mood felt lightened after that. I would have killed him if he had done that to me, but it seemed Weston needed that to bring him out of his gloomy mood. Later that afternoon, my phone rang. I went outside to answer the call. It was someone inquiring about a hoarding cleanup. I answered their questions and took down his information and set up a time to do an estimate. As I hung up the phone, Weston came running out of the house, sweating and panting. Through his struggled breathing, he said he felt like he got bit by a black widow. He said his sight was going in and out of tunnel vision and was freaking out. He asked if I could take him to the emergency room. I wasn't about to say no, so of course we got in the truck and I left Ethan and the other guys at the job and rushed him to the hospital. On the way there, Weston was moaning and groaning in what I assumed was pain. Nobody on our crew had ever been bitten by a black widow, but from what I understood, the first time you get bit isn't necessarily deadly, but it can make you feel like every bone in your body is being broken at the same time. So I think I broke every traffic law in trying to get him to the ER before that started happening. I screeched into a parking space and I rushed him into the ER. I approached the nurse at the desk and explained what happened, or at least what we think happened. Now, I've never been to an emergency room. The only experience I had was the show ER, and so I wasn't really sure what to expect. When she simply handed me a clipboard of forms and asked that I fill them out and have a seat, someone would be with us shortly, well, all I could do is take the clipboard. The fact that her face did not stretch in surprise or concern, and a team of doctors didn't come rushing to take Weston on a gurney was shocking, but somehow it was also calming. I sat Weston down and helped him fill out the forms. Luckily, he didn't have to wait long until a nurse called us into the back. I asked him if he wanted me to go with him, and he said yes. So I followed him into the back, and the nurse started doing her nurse stuff. Taking his temperature, blood pressure, asking a battery of questions, etc., etc. Once the preliminaries were all done, she began checking him for any indication of a bite mark. After checking his arms, legs, back, neck, and chest, there was no indication whatsoever that he had been bitten by anything, let alone the red hourglass mark Lactrodectus hesperus. The nurse suspected he was having a panic attack. Now, for someone who has one of the most unique jobs and sees everything that almost nobody else sees, there are a lot of common things that I've never had any dealings with. A panic attack was another one for the list. I didn't even know they were real. She wanted to get him in for an ECG just to make sure he wasn't having a literal heart attack or something. After which, the results confirmed that he was completely fine and just having a panic attack. There was nothing to worry about, and unless he wanted a pill, he would eventually just feel better. He opted to skip the pill, and he was just going to go home and lie down. I understood, and we went back to the job site, and I offered to drive him home. Now, as I believe I've mentioned previously, our crew rides with us to the job, so I would have to have cut the whole day short, which I would have gladly done. But he said not to worry about it, and he would just chill in the truck and wait for a friend to come pick him up. When he left, I explained what happened to Ethan, and I slapped him on the arm. I couldn't really blame him, but at the same time, I blamed him. Weston was already having a hard time, and Ethan had to go and scare the shit out of him. It was funny, but still. Just as a sidetrack here, the client wasn't on site during all of this. We don't joke around about people's living conditions or death or anything of that nature. We also don't joke or goof off on site when a client is around. However, there are times when things become too serious, so now and again we might sneak up and say boo or hide in a dumpster to jump out and scare someone to lighten the mood, like Ethan did. This job can really get the better of you, so we try to create an environment for our employees where they don't dread going to work. I think it goes without saying, but that was Weston's last day. He came to us and apologized for the lack of notice, but he explained that being around those needles just really sent him back to bad times, and he couldn't go through it again. We completely understood. I made sure it wasn't Ethan's joking around that upset him, and he assured us that it wasn't that at all. He actually loved working for us, but for the sake of his sobriety, those needles were a really big trigger that he hadn't anticipated. I gave him a big hug and thanked him for everything. I told him I was sorry to see him go, that he was a great employee, and we'd be happy to be a reference for him. I also told him we'd love to still keep in touch, which we do. So a little update on Weston. He's still clean and sober, and now he owns his own business and is doing great. Anyway, we continued the job and got the place looking pretty good. It was a hoarding house, and so there was a significant amount of damage from the neglect that needed to be repaired. But it was at least in a condition where contractors could come in and work without having to deal with filth and biohazards. I called the client and asked her to come out and take a look at the home just to sign off and make sure there wasn't anything else she wanted us to do before we left. There wasn't, and she was very thankful for us having helped her with such a burden. Since insurance was covering the job, she didn't have a check for us, not until insurance paid the claim. So we said our goodbyes and she thanked us for everything. We loaded up all of our equipment and hit the road. A month went by, which is a typical turnaround time for most insurance companies to have paid. So I called the client to follow up and see if she received payment. She had, but she was unable to deposit it. We've had these situations arise in the past, and so it didn't seem like a big deal. We knew how to handle it, or at least we thought we did. On a typical blood job, the insured is either living or dead. When the insured is the deceased, it sometimes presents problems with the bank. Their client is deceased, so until they have legal documents giving someone the right to access their accounts, there's not much the bank can do. In this solitary instance, the insured was still living, but she was mentally incompetent. I believe she still thought her son was alive. So getting her to sign over a check or any other document was out of the question. This meant that our client had to first obtain power of attorney. In order to do that, she had to A, get written testimony from two separate medical professionals, and then B, prove she was the next of kin and prove that she had informed every living relative of her mother about the situation and ensure no family members contested her having power of attorney. Then she would have to go to court and present this evidence. Once that was obtained, the next step was to obtain conservatorship. For those of you who are unfamiliar with it, let me just say it's a lengthy process, and even more so if the person in question is mentally incompetent. I understand the need for this process, but when you've done a huge job and you're waiting on payment, well, your patience can certainly be tested. After having explained all of this, she asked if we knew any tricks or tips to speed up the process. She told us it could take anywhere from 6 months to a year. She was very regretful for not being able to pay us, and she was trying to do everything she could to get the money, but her hands were tied. Ugh. Of course, we told the client there was nothing to worry about. We were familiar with the whole process and we'd take it as it came. In my head, I was screaming. I'm used to waiting anywhere from 2 weeks to a month, sometimes a little more for payment, but 6 months to a year? In the end, it took the full year. Court dates were pushed back, distant relatives had to be tracked down with the use of a private investigator, documents had to be drafted and signed, but we somehow managed not to let it get us down, and we finally got paid. It was a huge job, and it would go down in our books as one of the biggest. Thank you for listening to The Cleaning of John Doe. Today's episode was produced by Resonate Recordings. If you're looking for another podcast while you're waiting for our next episode to drop, check out this one.
Hey guys, it's Lainey, host of the True Crime Fan Club podcast. If you're a true crime addict like I am, then my podcast is for you. It's a podcast for the ultimate true crime enthusiast, giving you a glimpse into the life and crimes of the most demented minds. You won't want to miss an episode.
Awesome. Well, thanks for tuning in and be sure to head over to Apple Podcast and subscribe. Be sure to tune in next week for The Bludgeoning, a horrific story about a hitman and an elderly woman fighting for her life.